it does this. All right, everyone, it's the Grim Lord here, and this is the Grim Rant Show. I've got Dead Penetration here.
What's up?
And we don't have Empress, because according to the poll, which was a 5-8 poll, Empress is out. She's done. It's over. I know you guys, there were some guys that she says apparently were on her side, and they did like her, and they appreciated her. If you did like her on the show, I'm sorry.
I'd love to know why.
We did,
no judgment.
But we did a video, you know, we did a democratic thing. I basically went into the server, and I said, okay, she wants to come back, but not on the show. She wants to come back as a message role, which is really weird to me.
What kind of message is she preaching?
No. Basically, so she could just be in the server and talk. She didn't want...
She's wanting the same role that everybody's wanting her off of in the first place.
No. She didn't want to be on the show. She just wanted to be in the server to talk. To just hit...
Oh, just talk separate from the show?
Just type messages in the server. She just wanted to type messages in the server and respond to things.
It felt like
spying a little bit. It's like, why would you want to be in there?
And you already have such bad things to say about everybody.
Right. Like, so we did this democratically, and it was 5 yeses. Or actually, to be absolutely fair, when I set up the emojis, because I set it up as an emoji poll, which means you set up a yes and a no, and it counts the yes and the no as one each. So it's equal.
Any hanging chads?
And then after that, we had 4 people that voted yes. So she had 4 people in the server that voted yes for her. And we had 7 people that voted no. So it was really 4-7. And still, that's a 4-7 ratio, man. I mean, come on. What are we going to do? Like, so she's gone. She's out. That's literally how it's going to be. Not much else to say on that. I'm glad it's over. I mean, I'll be honest. At first, when she was on, it was cool. It was like, all right, this is
the first episode or two, probably.
Yeah, the first couple episodes were fine, but then it just started getting crazy, and it was too much. I didn't want any more of that. Plus, she's been begging me to leave and live with her and all this crazy crap. I'm not doing that either.
Uh-huh.
It's really crazy.
If you want to chop your nuts off.
No, I don't want to
do
that.
From here.
No. I had another woman hit me up a couple days ago, too. And she's like, oh, yeah, let's talk on video chat and all that. I've known her for a while.
I have no problem talking about it.
But the thing about it is, like, yesterday she was supposed to, you know, meet to talk. And she said, oh, I didn't have my chat on. I'm like, okay. So you're all gung-ho about me talking with you, and then you're like, oh, well, I didn't have my chat on.
It'll probably be when she's in the mood and you got a lot going on.
Yeah. Because... Well, see, I had a lot going on. All right, I'll tell you what happened. A little personal anecdote. So basically, I went to the restaurant to go pick up some fast food, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the car wouldn't start. What? Well, yeah, after she turned the car off, the car wouldn't start.
Hmm.
So we had somebody come over and look at it, a friend of the family who works on cars, thank God. It was better than the fucking roadside service they were going to send. And basically, he looked at it and he said, oh, your battery connector isn't even connected. Like, it's loose.
Oh, no.
It was so loose, you could just...
No, that happens.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, it can. It depends.
Well,
know.
He tightened it back up, and it
was
good
probably
to go.
From when it was at the shop last or whatever.
No, that was a brand new, like.
Well, yeah, but they
yeah,
still
that's true.
Tune, you know,
yeah, that's true.
Run their checkups and all that.
Yeah, that's true. Somebody didn't do their job, and she's like, "Well, I'm surprised it did that because it could have done that at other places, but." We just happened to have a man that happened to be on his way home, and sure enough, he came in there and fixed it. He showed me what was wrong. I was like, oh, shit,
so now I don't have to come back now.
Well, I mean, I know how to fix it now, though, too. He showed me how to do it.
Oh,
it's really, really simple.
Nothing to it.
Yeah, it's very simple.
I just
put
some channel locks in your vehicle.
You know, you didn't even have to do that. You just have to
with
what
tool did he use?
Your pliers.
Pliers.
You just use
channel
some pliers.
Lock sock pliers.
Oh, okay.
Kinda.
All right.
It's like a mix between a wrench and pliers.
Okay. Well, that's what he did because he didn't have his wrench available. He's like, well, just use pliers and there it did and tighten
that
up.
You know what dikes are? Wire cutters.
Yeah. Okay. Well, now that that's over with, let's go ahead and get started on the articles because that's what you're all here for. So, let me see if there's something. All right, where's my... We got a lot of articles, by the way. Mm-hmm. And we have more tech articles now, guys. I know that a lot of you guys were like, oh, what's with all the relationship shit? That was good for when Empress was on. She's not. So now we can talk tech again and maybe some more political shit. Where the hell is my newsroom? Oh, I'm in it. Okay. So, we're going to go briefly over some of these articles so we're not just, you know. Mike Rowe's warning to white-collar workers. The robots are coming for your white-collar job. With many experts fearing AI developments could lead to more layoffs, there are questions and concerns being raised about what could be next for the U.S. labor force. Fox Business How America Works host Mike Rowe issued a warning Thursday about AI developments and what it means for the white-collar worker. You can't put your head in the sand, but you can't panic either. It's coming. You know the robots are coming, he said on the Big Monday Money Show Thursday. People used to say that robots are going to destroy skilled labor. Well, not really. I haven't seen any plumbing robots. I haven't seen any electrician robots. And I don't think we're going to see any artificial intelligence in the skilled trades to that degree. You can't stop it. All you can do is decide to freak out completely or not. The rapid growth of AI has many industry experts trying to predict which job sectors would be most impacted as well as how many jobs could be replaced. One expert, Ben Goertzel, predicted the tech could potentially replace 80% of jobs in the next few years. He is the founder and chief executive officer of SingularityNet, and he told France's AFP News and an agency at a summit in news agency at a summit in Brazil last week that a future like that could come to fruition with the introduction of systems like OpenAI's ChatGPT. So there's a couple more studies and things like that. Goldman Sachs said that several industries have relatively little exposure to automation by AI technologies, including cleaning, installation, maintenance and repair, construction and extraction, production and transportation moving. Each had over half of their tasks viewed as not being automatable, with AI largely serving as a complementary tool for the remainder of those tasks. Generally, fields less exposed to AI-driven automation tend to involve manual and outdoor work or specialized knowledge. Goldman Sachs report found healthcare practitioners and support staff, fishing, farming, and forestry personal care and protective services had less than one quarter of the tasks that weren't exposed to AI-driven automation, although each had at least a portion of their tasks that could be complemented by AI. So, what it's saying is, again, that AI is not coming to just take your job away, but it's going to be a complement to the jobs that we do have.
I bet it depends on...
On the job.
On the job. And really, I couldn't blame anyone if they did replace a lot of different workers, depending. Well, I know where we're at. Our store, they can't keep good workers.
Yeah. AI, go ahead.
I mean, anybody that has their job replaced has almost brought it on themselves because they're not going to get as good a services with real humans at do their job well. Whether they like their job or not, as long as they do their job well. Because, I mean, customers expect a certain... something when they come there, you know, something that stands out. It's like the self checks at a lot of these stores. My mom has just completely stopped going in the store and just does grocery pickup because she refuses to ring up her own groceries.
Right, I agree.
She said, if I'm paying for them, someone's gonna check me out.
Right.
And in towns where stealing's common, I think it's stupid to have self-checkouts anyway.
Yeah, it's...
you already got 100 cameras on them. Why not let them check out their own expensive stuff?
Well, all right. Here's another one. AI expert says ChatGPT is way stupider than people realize. Robotics researcher and AI expert Rodney Brooks is arguing that we've been vastly overestimating OpenAI's large language models on which its blockbuster chatbot ChatGPT is based on. In a terrific interview with IEEE Spectrum, Brooks argues that these tools are a lot stupider than we realize, not to mention a very far cry from being able to compete with humans at any given task on an intellectual level. Overall, he says, we're guilty of a lot of the sins of poorly predicting the future of AI. Long story short, is AI posed to become the sort of artificial general intelligence AGI that could operate at a similar intellectual level to humans? No, because it doesn't have any underlying model of the world, he told the publication. It doesn't have any connection to the world. It's correlation between language. Brooks' comments serve as a valuable reminder of the current limitations plaguing AI tech and how easy it is to imbue their output with meaning even though they were engineered to simply sound rather than reason, like humans. We see a person do something, and we know what else they can do, and we make a judgment quickly, he told the Spectrum, but our models for generalizing from a performance to a competence don't apply to AI systems. In other words, current language models aren't able to logically infer meaning, despite them making it sound like they can, which can easily mislead the user. What the large language models are good at is saying what an answer should sound like, which is different from what an answer should be, he said. The researcher said he's been experimenting with large language models to help him with arcane coding, but ran into some serious trouble. It gives an answer with complete confidence, and I sort of believe it, he said. And half the time, it's completely wrong. And I spend 2 or 3 hours using that hint, and then I say, that didn't work, and it just does this other thing. Now, that's not the same as intelligence, he said. It's not the same as interacting. It's looking it up. In short, Brooks believes that future iterations of the tech could end up in some interesting places, but not AGI. And given the risks involved in having an AI system supersede the intelligence of a human being, it's probably better that way. So again, it's only making you think it knows what it's talking about, yeah, but it really doesn't.
No, I don't doubt it doesn't know what it's talking about.
But it sounds cool.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I can have
so
it...
So we don't need to worry about Skynet is what you're saying.
Not really, because it can make you think you have to worry about it, but again, it doesn't know what it's talking about. It just wants... It can make you think it does. Like, if I asked it a question, how would Batman perform on Jeopardy? And it actually did give me an answer was fairly respectable. Like, it knew what it was talking about.
I mean,
It'll tell you what you want to hear.
It's the Rain Man of the robot AI.
Yeah, it'll tell you what you want to hear, but...
Ask you how much a candy bar costs. About $100.
Yeah.
It
doesn't really know. Yeah, as a matter of fact, that's a good test. Let's see here. I'm going to plug in right now. Let's see here. How much does a candy bar cost? We're going to do this in real time.
About $100.
We're going to do this in real time.
That's just from the menu.
Okay. It says... The price of a candy bar can vary depending on various factors such as the brand, size, location, and any applicable taxes or discounts. Since I don't have access to real-time data and the prices of the bars can change over time and vary by region, I cannot provide you with an accurate price.
Can't even do...
However, as my last knowledge update in September 2021, in the United States, a standard candy bar typically ranges from 50 cents to $2. Mm. It's always best to check with local retailers or online sources for the most up-to-date pricing information. Mm. So it can't keep up with inflation because a candy bar... does cost a little bit, about $2, I'd say, would be fair.
No, that's a famous line from that movie. Oh, also, can it count toothpicks?
Right. Here's one from Big Think. Using big words doesn't make you sound smarter. George Orwell got it right. Never use a long word where a short one will do. But that's not what he was trying to say.
Well, don't use a word you don't understand the meaning to, that's for sure. Well, some people do that all the time, and it really makes them sound goofy in the head.
Well, here's the problem. The problem is George Orwell was saying that they were going to dumb down speech to make people more malleable. He wasn't saying that people should speak more simply.
Well, you think about, in the past, speech... has been used to...
Oh, Lord, I hate this. I hate the opening paragraph of this one. Does grandiloquent language articulated via verbose constructions and multifarious lexicological composition maximize information consumers' appraisement of author intelligence, or is simple better? Boy, I hated that paragraph. A fun psychology study conducted a few tests to probe this question. The author asked different readers to evaluate multiple versions of various texts written with more or less complex wording and structure. The readers' preferences were clear and revealed more interesting truths along the way. For example, readers preferred graduate school admissions essays that used smaller and simpler words over essays that swapped in longer words from a thesaurus. The quality of the essays varied, but the author noted, complexity neither disguised the shortcomings of poor essays, nor enhanced the appeal of high-quality essays. In other words, George Orwell got it right. Never use a long word where a short one will do. But perhaps the readers weren't put off by the big words rather than the clunkiness of the text that resulted from altering it. To test an idea, an unknown piece of text, the abstract of a PhD thesis, written by an unknown author, was given to different readers in two forms. The first was the original text, containing a deluge of long, complex words. The second was a simplified version that replaced some big words with smaller, simpler ones. Readers gave the simple version better marks, even though this time it was the altered text. The readers were also presented the following two texts, with half receiving the first and the other half receiving the second. I'll read both of these. This is the complex one, and then there's the less complex one. You tell me which one you think makes more sense or is easier to understand. Okay, the complex one. There remain to be investigated by me many things concerning the attributes of God, and many things concerning me myself or the nature of my mind. But I shall perhaps resume these things at another time, and now nothing seems to be more urgent, after I have noticed against what we were cautioned and what were to be done in order to reach the truth, than I might try to emerge from the doubts in which I have gone in the previous days, than that I might see whether something certain concerning material things could be had. Now, if that wasn't a bunch of gobbledygook.
Yeah.
Now, here is the more, the less complex, condensed version.
Probably much shorter.
Many other matters representing the attributes of God and my own nature or mind remain for consideration, but I shall possibly on another occasion resume the investigation of these. Now, after first noting what must be done or avoided in order to arrive at a knowledge of the truth, my principal task is to endeavor to emerge from the state of doubt into which I have these last days fallen, and to see whether nothing certain can be known regarding material things. Unsurprisingly, readers of the first text rated it as more complex. Readers of the second rated it as more intelligent. But here's the catch. It's the same text. It's Meditations by Descartes, just translated differently by two different people. Wow. This dodges the thorny question of text manipulation entirely and underscores again the importance of simplicity. But what if readers were told that Descartes wrote it? That changed things. When alerted to the famous text, readers gave higher ratings to both the simple and complex translations. Prestige matters, even if the text is hard to understand. Apparently, famous thinkers can break the simple is smarter rule. Why, other things being equal, do readers believe authors of wordier texts to be less intelligent than those who write more simply? That's true. Why do people think that if you use bigger words that you're a more intelligent person? Mm-hmm. Folk wisdom suggests that making things complex is easy, but making them simple is truly ingenious. The study author suggests a more technical idea, fluency. Readers evaluate the intelligence of an author not only by the quality of their arguments, but also by how well they understand what the author is trying to say.
Well, yeah, you're speaking to your audience. You want to... You don't want to try to go over their head. You want to reach them.
Using,
so if you're using big words, mm-hmm. you're not focusing on the main goal, which is for them to understand what you're saying. And they may not even understand what they're saying.
Using simple words and sentences makes the point clear. Big words don't make writing sound intelligent. They make it hard to understand. The author tested his hypothesis by assigning some readers a text printed in an atrocious font. While other readers received the common Times New Roman font. Though it was the exact same text, readers gave the hard-to-read font significantly worse ratings. The advice for writers is straightforward. Make things easy for your readers and they will find you brilliant. Brilliant. Makes sense. Okay. We've got an anime-related thing here. Anime illustrator under scrutiny for suspicious use of AI. Fans of Slayers are seeking clarification from illustrator Arazumi Rui, who has been criticized and suspected of employing AI in the recent artwork of the series. Slayers is a light novel by Hajime Kanzaka that was serialized through Dragon Magazine in 1989. Due to its popularity back then, the anime adaptation of the light novel series was produced in the late 90s under the production of ENG Films and was acquired by Funimation in 2005. The series follows the story of a young sorceress named Lena Inverse. Together with her friends, she uses her magical powers and exceptional swordship skills to battle demons and wizards who wish their world to crumble and fall apart. The controversial art. Although the series has been on the lows lately, its peaceful era seems to have ended for now because of its recent scandal connected to its illustrator. Rui has a very distinct type of art style. It makes his work easier to set him apart and makes him stand out from other illustrators. Below is an example. Therefore, fans quickly notice the huge difference when Rui releases recent art featuring Lena Inverse on his profile. With her unique style, the suspicious use of AI in the art was very much evident. To confirm whether this allegation is true or not, fans demanded an answer from the illustrator himself by flooding him with statements like the following. In the end, it's a tool that professionals use to make their jobs easier. This style is the same as AI, isn't it? Looks like AI. It's okay for him to say he used AI. One of the Twitter users seemingly fed the illustration to an AI image detector, and according to the results, the image was 99% likely to be generated by AI. Wow. Well, I didn't even know there was actually a thing to do that. Although, using an AI for Slayer's art or any type of series is not a crime, especially when one uses it to provide better art for the viewers and readers. Still, transparency is significant for fans, illustrators, writers, and even production companies to have in order to build a stronger connection through a particular show or series. The use of AI in various works is no longer surprising. With the constant rise of tech, it's quite understandable that some are already using AI in order to come up with an illustration to their liking. In China, freelance illustrator Amber Yu revealed in an interview via Rest of World that the use of AI is currently being done by massive Chinese gaming companies to generate game illustrations. Compared to the traditional crafting made by illustrators, AI software makes it possible to produce drawings in a matter of seconds. There are now companies that are embracing the use of AI. This decision of theirs is greatly affecting illustration employment in the industry. Although it seems that AI is presumed to leave plenty of illustrators jobless, this is not the case at all. It should also be emphasized that the presence of AI software in the industry provides convenience to companies. By learning to embrace the positive effects of the said technological advancement, illustrators or mangakas will be given the option in order to not miss their deadlines anymore. The rise of AI softwares gives them more luxury to focus on other aspects of the art or series that needs to be enhanced to ensure its success to the viewers or readers. Okay. So there you go with that. I think AI can... I mean, you gotta think about it. These people are dying because of Kuroshi, which means they're overworking themselves to death. So if the AI makes the process a little easier and they don't have to kill themselves... It's probably worth it, overall. That's actually hard, by the way. What you're seeing in this is actually very difficult. By the way, I have the name of this game because I was looking through my files and realizing I have so many games I haven't played that are actually good. And this is called Adventures of Chris. So anybody that's interested in it, it's probably not that expensive on GOG and Steam and stuff like that. So pick it up if you like it. This interests you. It's actually more fun than you think. It's surprisingly fun. And the team that made this, they've also made some other really fun games. All right, so we've got, to my surprise, Jeff Bezos has said yes to Lauren Sanchez. They are going to be engaged after a swoon-worthy proposal on his super yacht. Because, you know, he's Jeff Bezos. And a ginormous diamond to seal the deal. So, launching their lives together, the Amazon boss has popped a question to his Emmy Award-winning journalist girlfriend on board his $500 million super yacht, sources tell DailyMail.com. It's a super yacht!
Would he be doing as well if he didn't have the money?
The couple was seen kissing and canoodling on board Koru across the weekend, while Sanchez, 53, struggled to conceal the rock the size of a Balearic island that glinted on her ring finger, sparking proof that she said yes. The newly minted fiancés were pictured off the coast of Cairns, where they were enjoying a Mediterranean odyssey and the inaugural voyage of Bezos' $500 million super yacht. It's a super yacht! Sorry, I just... Okay, and that's literally all that is being... there's a little bit more. About the yacht. At 417 feet long and 230 feet tall, Koru is one of the world's largest sailing yachts, complete with 250 feet support vessel that boasts its own helipad. Well, at least they don't, as long as they don't hit an iceberg, I guess they'll be fine. The pair flew into Europe by private jet and were first seen on the deck of the super yacht last weekend. Never knowingly understated, the man who built his own space rocket gave a less than subtle cue that his voyage would be all about Sanchez, as Bezos 59 commissioned a curvaceous figurehead for the boat's prow. And you know what women would say? That's objectifying women to have a curvaceous...
Not when they got the chance to be
part
owner of many...
Yep. It changes a lot. It is unclear when the gold burnished polished wood sculpture became part of the vessel's design, but the yacht was commissioned in 2018, a year before Bezos and Sanchez's affair was exposed by the National Enquirer in a flurry of scandal that ended both their marriages. The story was published on January 9th of 2019. Earlier the same day, Bezos and his then-wife, Mackenzie Tuttle, 53, published an announcement on Twitter that they were separating and that the split after 25 years of marriage was amicable. Now, how old is she? I gotta find out how old she is again.
Yeah. That's always good.
She is... I don't know. It's not saying. She's definitely not 53. Around the same time, Sanchez told her that her then-husband, Patrick Whitesell, 58, the truth of her affair with Bezos and revealed that she had been approached for comment by the Enquirer. Bezos was introduced to Sanchez, then a longtime anchor of Fox Good Morning LA, in 2016 by his friend, her husband, Whitesell, co-CEO of Hollywood talent agency WME. As couples Bezos and Mackenzie and Sanchez and Whitesell socialized together with the unwitting spouses, each considering the other's a friend. In the wake of the revelation of the affair, Bezos and Sanchez's marriage has imploded. Novelist Tuttle walked away with $35.6 billion settlement.
Damn.
The bulk of which she has vowed to give away to charitable causes. She went on to marry Seattle science teacher Dan Jewett, though the marriage ended in September of 2022.
She was the breadwinner. Of course it ended.
But while the start of their relationship may have been stormy, it looks like it's smooth sailing for Bezos and Sanchez these days. Pictured on the deck of Koru, a name which is Maori for coil or loop, and refers to the unfurling of a fern frond, the two appeared more in love than ever. Fittingly, the Koru design which is in common with traditional Maori art, is meant to symbolize new life, growth, and peace. Let's see here. Photographs taken on Bezos, of course. He's been hitting the gym. Yep, there is... Okay, here it is. Women would call this objectifying.
That looks like the
old pirate thing. They actually did a thing. He wanted to make it look like Lauren Sanchez.
Is she related to Dirty Sanchez? Okay.
Yeah. See why Jeff Bezos upgraded.
Yeah. But how many billion he upgraded?
Yeah, I mean...
Of course, he's like, oh, I'll make more.
He'll make more. As long as people buy shit on Amazon.
Honestly, that's probably more money than anybody could imagine of spending.
Yeah.
But, you know, he does have employees and business. You know, a lot of that, they say, ends up getting wound up in the company anyway. Because, you know, you got to pay workers, you got to, you know, have buildings to house all the stuff he's shipping everywhere and all kinds of stuff.
So basically, there's a Yahoo article here. Big AI implications lurk in the Supreme Court's Andy Warhol verdict. and a move that could complicate the legal status of AI systems trained on existing visual artworks. The Supreme Court of the United States ruled Thursday that Andy Warhol's 1984 work, Orange Prince, infringed on the rights of rock photographer Lynn Goldsmith because the work's commercial intent was not covered by the fair use exemptions in copyright law. It's hard to argue with the commercial ambitions of AI-powered art, given the companies behind the trend like Stability AI are seeking valuations measured in the billions of dollars. Legal questions surrounding the field are already mountainous in volume and scope. The new ruling appears sure to muddy matters. AI art is created by artificial intelligence, which achieves a task by analyzing images it has access to, sometimes called scraping. Typical data sets include a large portion of the visual internet. Most artists have not consented to AI tools learning from and reinterpret. This isn't true, though. The AI art camp argues that the generated works are sufficiently transformative, since they are, in fact, amalgamations of many different works, so as not to be blatant theft. The Warhol ruling throws a new potential wrench into the works, arguing that transformative value alone is not enough to avoid copyright infringement where the potentially infringing work is commercial in nature. The justices wrote in the ruling that if an original work and secondary use share the same or highly similar purposes, and the secondary use is commercial, the fair use factor is likely to weigh against fair use, absent some other justification for copying. Wow. The decision is particularly interesting due to its likely implications for artificial intelligence, said Copyright Alliance CEO Keith, I'm not pronouncing that man's last name. Before the decision, some AI developers had relied on fair use to use copyrighted works without permission or compensation. This decision all but ensures that AI developers need to get permission from and compensate creators if they want to use their works to train their AI systems, and can no longer rely on fair use arguments that were specious even before this case was decided. The ruling doesn't change copyright law, he argued. It simply clarifies the law and the definition of transformative use. As a consequence, I think the creators will need to be careful about how derivative AI art is commercialized, said intellectual property lawyer Bart Lazar of Seyfarth Shaw, LLP. Lazar pointed out the key factor in Supreme Court's decision was that the Warhol work was licensed as a replacement for the Goldsmith photo. The fact that Warhol's image was used by Vanity Fair as an illustration in the article weighed heavily on the decision. But the legal world is far from a consensus on the broader impact of the ruling. William Scott Goldman, managing attorney at Goldman Law Group, wasn't certain the court's verdict would have major consequences for legal interpretations of fair use. The court appears to be merely offering its own narrow interpretation of how a transformative work is to be defined within the confines of this particular case only, said Goldman. As such, copyright owners may feel encouraged to rely on today's decision when bringing future actions, but it might not have much measurable effect beyond setting a basic threshold on the question of what could potentially qualify as transformative use under a fair use defense. In other words, the debate remains unsettled, and the Warhol ruling by itself won't pull AI out of the copyright quagmire. So, very interesting there. I don't know. Like, I use Stability AI. The program I use is basically backed by Stability AI. I've been doing some really cool stuff. I had that Eminem song, Not Afraid. Yeah. And there's that one song, he's like, everybody take my hand. I'm like, I wonder what that would actually look like. If everybody in the entire world would try to shake Eminem's hand. So I put that in there. I put everybody in the world basically grabbing Eminem's hand. And the AI was trying the best way to show that. And what we got in the end was him at a concert. It was basically showing him at a concert with a bunch of people. And they were all holding their hands out to him. And that's the best way the AI could basically figure that out. So instead of it, I thought I was going to get something funny. Because I actually literally put everybody in the world takes Eminem's hand. Yeah. But they didn't actually physically take his hand off, because sometimes an AI will read it like that.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what I was expecting. And that didn't actually happen. So I was pretty surprised by that.
There are issues with your vision versus what...
Well, I like the AI. I like that.
I mean, that's probably a good vision, but it's not what you...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I like that it gave me... Like, that's the way it figured it out, though. It basically had to problem solve. And like, how do I do this?
yeah.
Like, you know, I had a woman buying peanut butter, and it took a long time to really get that one to work out right the way I wanted it to. And you have to mess with it so many different times.
A woman buying peanut butter.
Yeah, I have woman. Man, you wouldn't believe all the crazy AI shit I've been having this thing
kind
make.
Kind of fetishes are you into?
No,
Get extra cream.
There was a woman posing with a bunch of mayonnaise and saying it was the whitest thing, white woman thing ever. And Drex said, no, it's not. And I think Invader also said it should be peanut butter. And that's basically when I said, okay.
Peanut butter.
What, black people don't like peanut butter? I know plenty of black people.
Well, it has to do with the dog stereotype.
Oh, that.
Yeah, so I basically...
Something completely different.
I basically had her buying all kinds of peanut butter. But there's some really crazy... There is a Burger Bites commercial.
You should have done it.
No.
While she's also buying a collar with the Night Skippy
no,
on it.
No, listen to this. This Burger Bites commercial is like doing acid without having to do acid.
Really?
Yes. Go look up the Burger Bites commercial when you get a chance. I recently saw this thing, and remember that they did the pizza one? Oh my god, this burger one. It freaked me out beyond anything I've ever seen as far as... AI is making beyond nightmare fuel. It's making really weird drug trips that I just cannot even... And this is a... This is moving. It's like, oh my god, this is incredible. But there's so many things I've made with AI over the past couple of weeks. And anytime something comes to me, I'm like, well, let me see what that's going to look like. And it's just really fascinating to fuck with.
Okay, 10 funny burger commercials.
Okay, don't have the sound on for that. Okay, you've got a funny one here. Menshumor.com. Man injects arms with petroleum jelly to look like Popeye, but he's surprised the ladies aren't queuing up. When you thought social media couldn't get any weirder, a new incident breaks the record. A Russian man, famous as Russian Popeye, injected oil in his arms, which bloats his biceps to an abnormal size. He suffered from a negative image, and in an attempt to look attractive to the opposite gender, he underwent bizarre procedures. Kirill Terenshin now regrets his decision to get injected with artificial transformational procedures. Terenshin is dubbed Russian Popeye because his biceps looked as pumped as the 30s fictional character. The gigantic size of his arms has caused him serious issues, and some even pose life-threatening problems. Terenshin originally belongs to Moscow, Russia, but he resides in Bali, Indonesia. He revealed in a YouTube video to his 1,43,000 audience how feeling like a sucker prompted him to inject fluid into his arms. He shared, "A long time ago when I went to the gym at 16, I was skinny." He continued, "I played computer games for a long time, and I have, as you see, the slouching back and have a neck like a goose." The man admitted to having body complexes and felt he wasn't good-looking for girls. "I've always had complexes about walking around constantly thin, poor thing. To have a desired body type, he started working out and eating 6 meals daily, amounting to a whopping $150 worth of daily groceries. But all in vain, because he was still unsatisfied with his looks. His complex escalated to a point where he took the extreme step of injecting 3 liters of petroleum jelly into his arms. This caused a blocked blood flow to his muscles and ended up killing some of the tissue. Subsequently, he had to undergo a series of surgeries to surgically remove the enormous lumps of jelly. This posed a threat to having his arms amputated if the jelly stayed inside his body. All in the name of looking desirable. Ah! I dreamed of being the Hulk and started injecting very large doses," he said. "The goal was just to get big. However, this became a nightmare for him, and he admitted to ignoring the consequences of injecting his body with several liters of petroleum jelly. Though he's on hiatus, his arms still look exceedingly large. Additionally, the man has since undergone surgical procedures on his face, including having 40 milliliters of filler injected in 2 days. The obsession is real, but now the guy regrets his decision. He said on social media, "I want to get rid of these arms, but unfortunately there's no fixing it anymore. Since I'm 26 and I'll be 27 this year, my body's already grown to its age," he confessed. In his confession, he said that his motivation for getting biceps was to attract beautiful women, because he believed it was impossible for such an ordinary guy to date such girls. Yeah. But now, after fillers, he thinks he looks like the Joker.
Every time I hear a woman said, "Why can't their biceps be larger?" Oh.
He thinks... But now, after fillers... Oh, hold on. He says he says he looks like the Joker. People who follow him on social media also pose concerns for his health because the guy now seemed completely unnatural and, dare we say, not attractive.
Does he reply, why so serious?
It's pretty funny there, yeah. Okay, ex-OnlyFans creator calls working on the site lonely and boring. Woman who used to work full-time as an OnlyFans model has explained why she decided to go back to working a regular job. Dasha Daly from Perth, Australia, made the transition from a regular job to creator on OnlyFans just 2 years ago, where she was her own boss and earned good money. However, the self-employed life wasn't her describing it as lonely and boring, and recently updated fans on her career changed back to a normal job via a TikTok video. It's day one at a real job after being a spicy content creator for 2 years, she said. After a 10-hour shift, I'm honestly really tired, but I just feel so fulfilled that I've got a normal job again and I've actually worked. She added that she feels so much better than sitting at home all day and doing the content creation. I'd rather just have a real job and actually feel like I've got a purpose helping in society. Daly wrote in a video caption, I work 10 hours for such little money, yet I am happier, and being a content creator gets lonely and boring. In a recent video, she also detailed how her previous job affected her mental health really badly, and added that her current job is in events and is not a 9-to-5 nor permanent position. While the Aussie is no longer being a full-time OnlyFans creator, she still does create content on the side sometimes when she needs money. In the comments section, Daly's followers shared their support for the creator's career change. One person wrote, this is such an amazing honest share. Happy for you that you're happy. Glad to know what's best for you. All the best in the new journey, another person said. Someone else added, people need to be social. Enjoy the day-to-day. Well done. Thanks for sharing, a fourth person commented. While exhausted, I'm sure the feeling of having a real job and positively contributing to society must feel amazing. In a previous video, she was candid about the struggles of getting a normal job after being in the sex work industry. I've been applying for jobs and no luck so far. And when I do get an interview, hopefully someday, I'm not sure how I'm going to explain what I've been doing this whole time, she said, asking her followers for advice. Yeah. Daly also noted how it's really hard to get back into society and try to find a real job. Well? Yeah. Okay.
Well, I mean, everything about your life at that point's fake and staged, so I can see why I'd be lonely and...
Yeah, but she still does it on the side, which, you know.
Well, I mean, she may not do all the, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, I feel like people that are Instagram models must feel lonely and, you know, unaccomplished and probably bored out of their mind.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because they got to stop every 10 minutes to take a photo. I'm having the best time in my life. When they are not, probably.
Okay, so we have... Trash or treasure? A thrifty New Yorker scoops up an $8,000 couch off the street for free, but viewers say it looks like Bed Bug Central. A thrifty New Yorker has divided the internet after scooping up an $8,000 designer couch which had been discarded on the street. Amanda Joy filmed a video of herself picking up and cleaning the luxury bubble couch from French brand Rocher Bobois and posted it to TikTok. But while some viewers bemoan that they never get that lucky, others speculated the designer item was likely filled with bed bugs. Joy explained, it was pouring rain and I was walking home and I saw the couch in the middle of the street. I called my dad begging him to come pick it up because I just couldn't leave it there. And, he told me no, it was not possible, but then he surprised me and showed me he did pick up the couch and he had it in his work office. Joy then records herself deep cleaning and vacuuming the sofa before moving it into her apartment with the help of her boyfriend and father. The practice of picking up discarded goods from the street and renovating them is known as stooping and is popular in New York, with many blogs and Instagram accounts devoted to it. The video has been watched more than 43 million times, but not all video viewers were convinced by her find. One wrote, "The people not think things are too good to be true. Nobody throws a couch out worth 8 bags for no reason." Another wrote, it looks so good, but I'm scared about it being bedbug central. The couch is fully handmade and part of a collection by designer Sasha Lakique for Rocher Bobois. The designer calls the bubble set of furniture an iconic piece in the collection. It comes in a range of all colors, including ivory, top, and sapin green, all listed for $8,490, down from its original price of $10,110 on the website. Yep.
It had to do some pretty awesome stuff.
The blue version of the couch picked up by Joy is not currently available on the website. Responding to some of the criticism, Joy insisted she had given the furniture a thorough clean and had found it in front of a very rich building. She explained rich people throw out all their furniture all the time because they get new furniture every other year. So I saw the opportunity and took it. And many of her followers were impressed with the find, as one asked, "Why am I never this lucky?" Another said, "Living in New York is living like in a treasure box. Many New Yorkers practice stooping regularly, and some do it specifically for the intention of flipping it for profit." An Instagram account called Stooping NYC has amassed more than 400,000 followers by regularly posting photos of furniture and goods left on the streets of the Big Apple. Last year, 68-year-old stooper called Denise Gordon revealed she made $2,000 by finding and flipping a leather Eames lounge. "People don't know what they're throwing away," Gordon, who lives in Gramercy Park, told the New York Times at the time. "In my neighborhood, they know and they don't know and they don't care." So, I mean, it is what it is. She wants a designer couch, she's got a designer couch. Okay, South China Morning Post. "Just wake up, woman. 32 in tears after man insults her idealistic marriage demands at matchmaking park in China, attracting public sympathy." A 32-year-old woman in eastern China who was verbally abused by a man at a matchmaking corner in a park has received an outpouring of sympathy on mainland social media. The woman, known as Athena, is an online influencer from Hangzhou in the Zhejiang province. She was reduced to tears during a local matchmaking event after the man criticized her age and desired qualities in a future partner as unrealistic, Nanyang News reported. In a video of the incident, the man, wearing sunglasses, holds his resume and criteria list for a romantic match as he points and laughs at Athena. "Yes, I'm exactly 32 years old. What's wrong?" she said in response. Hold on, read full article? "Do you know how idealistic your requirements are?" he said. Athena's dating profile information listed that she has a master's degree, annual earnings of 150,000 yuan, that's $21,000, and that she owns property. Her listed criteria for a partner included a bachelor's degree or above, and property or betrothal gift of 50,000 yuan. The man said, "Why would anybody with the qualifications you asked for choose you? Just wake up." Athena replied in a raised voice, "Whether you choose me or not, it's nothing to do with me." The man then tried to rally the spectators behind him. "How old is she? How many more years of youth does she still have?" he asked. "What good does it do to buy her and take her home?" At this point, Athena stopped responding to his attacks and began to cry. Some of the crowd tried to comfort her, while others criticized the man for harassing and humiliating the woman.
The truth hurts.
The story has gone viral on mainline social media, with many outraged by the man's behavior. One person said, "I really want to beat this man. Nobody can stop me." Another commenter said he was so rude. What did he mean by buy her and take her home? Stories about blind dates and matchmaking often tread in China. Last December, a couple got married just 4 months after a blind date ended with them spending 10 days together in COVID-19 when the quarantine went viral. And in November of last year, a woman in eastern China trended after she sought advice online after a blind date turned up with his young daughter and revealed he had been divorced just 1 week before because his ex-wife did not give him a son.
Well, yeah, that is...
Different in China.
Well, you gotta think, too.
Man, the look on his face, though, it's just amazing.
Women do the same thing, but...
Just wake up! I wonder if there's actually some video feed. I want to hear this man. Is there a way
you have to be subtitled, probably.
No, I don't think so. Oh, no, he says it in English, I think.
Oh, okay.
Well, I don't know. Let's see. The video...
Well, if he's in China, I would assume it would...
Oh, here we go. If it lets us. Oh, no, it doesn't. It doesn't, but I still want to hear him say, "Just wake up!" That would be great. Like, that somebody needs to capture that and put it as a thing, because that's fucking perfect.
Pots, kettles, and colors. Women do the same thing. You don't see other women like, "I want to beat her ass." No, because they know what it is. A man knows what it is, too. A woman feels like her youth is an asset in a marriage, just like a man knows his money and success is.
Yeah.
A lot of times.
Fortune magazine, your life partner is your biggest career choice. Excuse me, your life partner is the biggest career choice you'll ever make. Here's how to get it right. Exactly as TFM said. And I argued with the Empress, and she said, No, it's not like getting a job. It is like getting a job. It is like interviewing for a job.
What else would you call it? I mean, she probably didn't think about
but it is
like that.
It is.
But no, it's exactly what it is. You're trying to find someone that you're compatible with. I mean, money's nice, but I like women for other reasons.
Okay. More than a century ago, political activist Emma Goldman wrote that marriage is primarily an economic arrangement. Yep. And 109 years, the 109 years since may render some of Ms. Goldman's reasoning irrelevant, but with new economic environments come an altered balance of romances and finances. And that is the topic of Money and Love, a book from Professor Emerita at Stanford University. Yeah, Maya Strober and social innovator and Strober's former student, student Abby Davison. The self-professed roadmap for life's biggest decision chronicles everything from dating to marriage to having children and where to live, though through to housework, finances, and even divorce, while providing a framework and exercises to help readers make informed decisions with hopefully positive outcomes. One of the book's aims is to help readers establish long-term goals with their partner, but the pair believe there's some resistance to acknowledging the economic impact of having a partner. One of the contributing factors to strained relationships is what some would call falling in love, but what Davison might describe is the slide versus decide issue. Such situations might arise from a couple deciding to live together to save money, having not discussed important matters such as financial goals, household expectations, religion, and more. By not having these conversations, you risk being on different pages about what that move-in means, she explained. One person might think you're on the path towards marriage, the other person just thinks you want to save on rent. It's better to make a conscious decision, talk about it, know where the other person stands, and then all of the negative outcomes go away. It's the same with choosing a life partner, not to say, oh, we've been together so long, we might as well get married. Instead, make the conscious choice and make sure that you both want the same things in the long run. Davison took Strober's class in 08 with her then boyfriend, now husband, and added, these topics, if you don't talk about them, can come out down the road in ways that might cause you to realize you're not that compatible and you might have to get divorced. Makes a lot of sense.
Well, I think any date should start with never telling them how much money you make, never acting like you make a lot
of money. But if you've
been
together for a long time, it's a different story. And yeah, that's what she's referring to.
Yeah, well,
so
I'm just saying, if you do that from the beginning, if they marry you, it's more likely because they like you than...
Yeah.
Or stick with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Arkansas school districts discuss how to implement new name pronoun law. Little Rock. School districts in Arkansas are now discussing how to implement a new law in the natural state. The law guides how teachers address students regarding their name and pronouns. Every district is having to implement this though Thursday night, the North Little Rock School Board went over it. The law requires district employees to call students the name that is on their birth certificate unless a parent has written permission to call them, unless a parent gives written permission to call them something else. It also requires that they use the pronoun associated with their gender assigned at birth again, unless a parent or legal guardian gives written permission to not to. While the NLRSD board did not vote on this Thursday since it is statewide law, the human resources director did go over it with the board so they know what to expect this upcoming school year. He said, Megan Bailey, spokesperson for the ACLU of Arkansas, said this change is one of concern for the transgender community in the site. Well, the fucking ACLU might as well be a fucking communist front at this point.
There wasn't hardly any transgenders before.
I know, the ACLU...
Everyone started indoctrinating kids.
What do they call them?
Grooming. Yeah, that's another word for it.
Yeah. She provided a statement regarding it now... regarding it now applying to all school districts. Arkansas public schools should create inclusive and welcoming environments for all students regardless of their gender identity, and teachers should be supported in using correct pronouns for transgender and cisgender students alike. Teachers should not be prevented from affirming their students' gender identity, and trans students should not be singled out for discrimination. Documents of the school board meeting show this goes into effect on July the 1st. Yeah, ACLU, more commie crap. Why Japanese manga is outselling comic books in the West?
I can already tell you.
Japanese manga is selling incredibly well in the West, and it seems American comics can't keep up even on their home turf. For Western graphic novel and comic fans, especially in the United States, there are now two major factions competing in the market. Western, such as Marvel and DC, and the vast world of Japanese manga. Every consumer has their own preferences, and there may not be no single right answer, but manga does have some undeniable advantages over comics. Even in the West, where comics are highly mainstream and have been around for decades, manga is starting to outsell the former, and there are clear reasons why. Even with action figures in the MCU around to bolster consumers' interest, American comics compare poorly to manga in some key areas, from their common perception to the simple price. Many news sources state that Japanese manga has been selling incredibly well in the West within the last few years, and titles such as My Hero Academia, Demon Slayer, and Jujutsu Kaisen are all appearing on bestseller lists with impressive regularity. Clearly, manga is more mainstream and popular than ever, and on the practical side of things, it may be because of prices and shopping venues. As some fans have argued online, it's simply more budget-friendly to get into manga than American comics, especially when comparing the page count of a product to the sticker price. American comics may seem cheap, being just a few dollars an issue, but a typical manga volume may have around 160 to 180 pages and only costs about $10 to $12, an excellent ratio for any consumer. Even if those pages are black and white, as opposed to richly colored Marvel and DC comics, that sheer value is tough to beat.
No, I wouldn't mind finding the old Punisher comics where they're in black and white.
That's kind of cool.
They say those were some very adult which Punisher was anyway.
Yeah, it
but
was.
They said that is very good run, the black and white.
Another factor is where consumers can find comics in Japanese manga. Not just how much those shoppers must pay for them. Comic books are usually sold in specialty comic stores, and such shops have a reputation for being intensely geeky places with certain types of clientele and content. Comic shops heavily cater to shoppers and pop culture fans who are deeply invested in this robust but relatively narrow industry, while Japanese manga feels more universal, and not just because of the stories found within. Manga volumes are usually paperback or hardback books, and they nearly always appear in mainstream bookstores such as Barnes & Noble, where any book lover might shop, not just Marvel, Dark Horse, and DC fans. This gives Japanese manga far more visibility for mainstream shoppers, and that minimizes manga's geeky aura. Anyone who visits Barnes & Noble to find something fun to read will not just romance novels and famous fantasy series, but also a huge section of graphic novels that cater to every kind of reader out there. Japanese manga actually has more in common with American comics than it does with typical Barnes & Noble fare, but it may not feel that way to the average consumer looking for some fun summer reading material, and that can make all the difference. Another advantage to reading Japanese manga is a very low barrier of entry. At worst, manga suffers from being read right to left, which may be mildly disorienting to new fans, and manga also tends to feature stories with slow pacing compared to comics. Fortunately for the manga industry, its narrative advantages are much bigger, starting with how linear manga is. Any manga series has one straightforward story, and the volumes go in order of 1, 2, 3, and beyond. This makes manga more similar to novel series that are meant to be read in just one order, while American comics are just all over the place. Even if comic publishers make an effort to provide clear entry points with rebooted universes and new storylines, manga has the advantage and doesn't suffer from a confusing decades-old web of interconnected stories and endless retcons or alternate continuities to sort through. Japanese manga may also be selling better than comics because of more accessible content. American comics appeal greatly to superhero enthusiasts and fans of gritty action series like Preacher, but that's too niche compared to the endless possibilities of manga, and sales reflect that. Only some pop culture fans will spend serious cash on endless Batman and X-Men issues, while anyone can fall in love with the more down-to-earth stories found in slice-of-life romance and comedy manga series. Manga has plenty of action series too, such as the Shonen Big Three, and seinen series like Vagabond and Berserk. But the medium covers all literary genres fairly evenly, so that attracts far more buyers. This diverse portfolio, along with its low barriers to entry, high visibility in bookstores, and excellent prices, makes manga the industry juggernaut it is, beating American comics at their game on their own home turf. Yep. Okay, so, company giving away TVs with a second screen that shows constant ads. Wow. A startup company called Telly is planning to give away a whopping 500,000 55-inch TVs to consumers, but with one huge catch. As if annoying commercial breaks on cable weren't enough, the sleek TV set will come with a second screen that will show you a non-stop stream of ads while you're catching up on your favorite shows. This second smart display will also show other widgets like the weather or stocks. To hammer the model home, Telly's chief strategy officer Dallas Lawrence told The Verge that both screens might even show ads at the same time when not in use. In other words, it's dystopian ad-supporting streaming TV nightmare. a transaction-based ecosystem that turns you and your viewing habits into the product. Telly's calling its invention the ultimate free TV upgrade on its website. The company was created by Ilya Polzan, who also co-founded the ad-supported app Pluto TV, an entirely ad-supported streaming service. Beyond its two displays, the Telly also has a camera, including a privacy shutter, to be fair, to enable things like free advanced motion tracking fitness programs or conference calls, as well as a microphone and motion sensor. In other ways, it has plenty of, it has plenty of ways to track you in your living room. And that all raises the question, how will Telly make sure that you're actually viewing its ads instead of just pushing a piece of furniture in front of the smart display? According to its typo-riddled activity data policy, get ready for may enhance video content and content recommendations. The company reserves the right to track a wide swath of metrics, including search queries, settings preferences, applications you open, purchases or other transactions you make, buttons you select, the time, frequency, and duration of your activities, physical presence of you and any other individuals at the TV, using the TV at any given time, and other usage data. Company may also share your viewing and activity data with third-party data partners and advertisers who use it to show you relevant ads and provide you with customized content. To even get on the company's waitlist for a free ad viewing experience, you'll have to live in the U.S. and fill out a lengthy questionnaire on the company's app, including what your favorite TV shows are and who your cell phone provider is, according to Ars Technica. In case all of these terms feel just a little too invasive, you can opt out of tracking for a hefty price. According to The Verge, the company previously said its TV set would cost $500. Otherwise, of course, you could also just buy a regular TV, which are often way cheaper than that. All in all, Telly's free TV feels like a pretty invasive piece of tech. Sure, not having to splurge on a fancy TV might be a great way to save some cash up front, but the experience clearly comes with a pretty substantial cost. In other words, Telly's making a pretty huge bet. To be successful in the long term, the company is incentivized to squeeze as much data out of its customers and ad dollars out of their eyeballs as possible. And that doesn't exactly sound like it will make for a pleasant viewing experience. No. So, here we go with another one. Indie Studio has its Discord username stolen out from under them. Really wondering how they're rolling out this feature. An indie studio has had its own Discord name stolen out from under them and now has issued a warning to other indie devs to beware. A warning for all indie devs waiting to claim their own username, Studio Rusty Lake writes on Twitter. We just received an email that we, as verified owners, could finally submit a new username and wow, Rusty Lake is already taken. If we as a server owner with 240,000 members can't even claim it... It says see more? Oh no, that's all he has to say. The issue arose a month after Discord announced changes to the way it handles usernames. Previously, usernames were case sensitive and had a forward number identifier attached to the end of them. Discord is removing those numbers and letting users choose new usernames if they've been rolling out the changes gradually. That means some Discord users are being allowed to secure new usernames before others, and a few have already claimed the names of studios such as Rusty Lake. Now we have a risk of impersonation and extra legal costs to file a possible trademark infringement, says Rusty Lake. In any case, Discord support was helpful enough to respond with an automatic response email to the issue, and the follow-up is directing us to another help desk. The studio ended its note with, really wondering how they are rolling out this new feature, if a random user can squat on established server brand names. Rusty Lake is a team behind several hit indies over the last few years. The studio primarily releases macabre point-and-click puzzle games with a classic hand-drawn art style. They even have a trilogy based on their own name with Rusty Lake Roots, Hotel, and Paradise. Discord has been in hot water recently with another update that implemented AI features onto the platform. Needless to say, it didn't go down well with many players. Oof. They haven't come for me yet. Okay. Daily Mail. Angela White. Remember the one we talked about that did 900 scenes? Remember that one?
Oh, yeah. I remember Angela.
Defiantly returns to adult film alongside Japanese porn star Hitomi Tanaka, the biggest tits in Japan, amid calls for her to quit the industry after 900 hardcore scenes. Collaboration of the century. In other words, this is a film that I want to see. Angela White has defiantly returned to shooting a long adult film alongside Japanese sensation Hitomi Tanaka in Tokyo this week. The Australian actress, who has been the subject of calls for her to quit the industry after 900 hardcore scenes, shared a clip of herself in the city. Angela squeezed into a skimpy pink bikini alongside Hitomi as the beloved pair teased a collaboration for fans. Holy moly, look at that. This is the best day of my life for real, Angela said, leaving little to the imagination as she playfully bounced up and down.
Just send me the picture.
I can't believe this is happening, Hitomi. Hitomi is here. Yes, I am so fucking glad. My God, it'll be amazing. Beloved Hitomi made a heart shake with her hands with Angela, later clarifying that Hitomi is not in the U.S. I just confuse everyone by saying Hitomi is here because now everyone thinks Hitomi is in the U.S., Angela said. Everyone in America is so excited and was like, no, we're in Tokyo right now, about to shoot the collab of the century. The surprise collaboration comes after Angela dropped her own hint that she could soon quit the industry. Huh. Wow. Everyone in America just got so excited. Yeah, they did.
That Japanese money, huh?
My God. After several high-profile TV and podcast appearances, she seems to be angling for a career in mainstream media or academia. She hinted at her future career path last week when she spoke at a conference at the University of California, Santa Barbara. Angela posed for a photo on Instagram next to social sciences and media studies professor Constance Penley. Academic pursuit remains an interest of mine and something I wish to return to in the future, she wrote in the caption. During the college lecture, Angela spoke to film studies students about her career. The performer, who popularized the sex position the Angela, I've never heard of it, also took part in a question and answer session with students after her speech. The university visit came after Angela insisted she wouldn't be retiring from porn anytime soon. Despite fans begging her to give her body a rest, Angela said she was doing fine and loves her job. We talked about that.
Yeah, I don't remember. But she is real pretty. I don't know what the sex move position
man,
is.
Man, Hitomi Tanaka. My God, it's going to be
what's
brilliant.
She look like?
She's got the biggest tits in Japan.
Oh,
I've got hundreds of pictures. That I don't have, because I'm not, of course, certainly not that kind of guy. Okay.
Oh, I call bullshit, but that's okay.
Take my voice, Avenged Sevenfold's M Shadows embraces AI. Let's try that one again. Take my voice, Avenged Sevenfold's M Shadows embraces AI. Artificial intelligence is changing our way of life by the minute. While this tech provides an ever-growing stream of new conveniences, most scientists agree it's the logical endgame of the AI drama is human extinction. Before we all get nuked by robots we've created, a la the Terminator, artificial intelligence will likely lead to economic catastrophe as corporations outsource human jobs to autonomous technology. While similar advancements have long plagued the manufacturing industry, new advancements have put artists in the crosshairs. For example, the current television writer strike is not just about wages. A major stipulation for the Writers Guild of America involves contractual guarantees the job won't be lost to artificial intelligence. Well, in predictably cynical fashion, the studios won't budge. In April, Universal Music had a song with deepfake vocals from Drake and The Weeknd removed from streaming services. In a statement, the label claims that the training of generative AI uses our artists' music was a violation of copyright law. Apocalyptic as all this sounds, not all artists live in fear of it. In the case of M Shadows, Avenged Sevenfold frontman is excited by the possibilities. He told Decrypt's GM podcast, if you're looking at purely this data brick of taking information and regurgitating to us in some way, whether it's through music or art or novels, literature, whatever it is, you're basically taking everything humans have ever done or discovered and you're giving it to the same that can distribute it to you quicker and in a different way, can mix it up and do it a different way. I think if you actually look at music, most fans aren't mad that all the drums are already being resampled and replaced. That's true. Pro Tools already will quantize your albums and make it perfect. You can auto-tune your voice to do all these other things, but for some reason they have a problem. And by the way, if you think about it, how you write music, it's like you're going into your own database of, I've listened to Bach, I've listened to Weekend, I've listened to Kanye, and I've listened to all these things, and now I'm going to regurgitate it in this way and spew out my own version of that. AI can be incredibly useful if you have AI doing some of that work for you. Give me 20 versions of this chord change, or I want to hear a different top line there, and you take a little thing that interests you, and you go somewhere with it. So now you're using AI not only to spark ideas, but you're using it a much quicker way to kind of get to these some of these cool little nuggets of gold that you're kind of like, oh, that's cool. Let's see where I can take that. So that's not really AI writing a song for you. It's kind of giving you this kind of jumping off point of, now where can I be creative with it? And I think that would be the next step. He elaborated that AI creates opportunities for fans to use the work of their favorite bands as mechanized learning tool for creating their own songs. What I think is cool is that, listen, there's a lot of fans that don't want to hear new Avenged Sevenfold. We're 40 years old now, and we're going places that are much more eccentric than they want, some of them. They might want another version of Waking the Fallen or City of Evil, which are some of our old records. Now, what's wrong with someone throwing in a prompt and saying, listen to those two records and send me a record with 11? Thank you! You know what? I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna fucking make 10 different versions of Disturbs the Sickness. Because that's one of my favorite fucking records growing up. So if I can literally have 10 more, 100 more songs of that style, I'll be fucking great. Right there. I'm like, oh my god! This is what I've lived for. And then I can take other records that I've always loved. Metal records. There's Dissection, Rain Chaos. A lot of people hate that record. They wouldn't care if I made 20 more fucking songs in that style. Let's see, now, what's wrong with someone throwing it? Okay, and if I was to give up my voice and say, take my voice and AI create an album that sounds kind of like that, I think that's cool. I think it'd be really cool if people can prompt their own versions of what Avenged Sevenfold sounds like. You get the sounds you want, you get all these things, but now you're getting different versions of albums that you like. Well, I mean, remember, Godsmack called it quits, but I like their first album a lot. So, if I could get 5 more records in that style, that would be amazing. You get the sounds you want, you get all these things, but now you're getting different versions of albums that you like. So I think there's something really cool there. And nothing that crazy or wrong about it. I back it. I think it'd be cool. As a human, I'm going to be going my own way, making my own stuff that I feel is kind of breaking the mold or pushing things forward. I'm giving the AI more data for the future, wherever I'm going to take it. But I think it's kind of cool, and I'd love to give up my voice to where people can create their own versions of our songs and whatever they feel would be cool. And I actually like their Hail to the King record. That's one of my favorite fucking records from them. So, M Shadows, I will be making 2 or 3 or 4 more versions of songs in that fucking style, even though they ripped off Metallica. Man, I can even take Metallica's best records and fucking make Master of Puppets 10 different ways. Like, could you just imagine the awesome shit that I can do with AI? Some Pantera records, Mudvayne, everybody likes that first Mudvayne, but Chad's, what, 49, 50 years old? He can't hit those anymore. But you know what? I might want an LD50, and I might want 50 versions of LD50. Yeah. So let's just, yeah, I'm all fucking for this. This is the future. Okay, so our last article of the, well, no, we've got 2 more, and then we're done. Yeah, that's kind of old. We'll do this one. We're gonna do these 2 then. Alright, harsh reality men face on dating apps. Recent research on women's dating profiles. This comes from Psychology Today, and it's by Greg Matos. Okay, we're not going to do the key points. We're going to read the whole thing. A few years before the pandemic swept our world, more people reported meeting romantic interests online than any other way. Rosenfeld, 2019. The promise of algorithmic magic connecting singles to their ideal matches has grown into a $3 billion industry. But for some, our current technological advances have not solved a problem that is likely to become more challenging. Recent industry survey data in the UK suggests app users spend up to 55 minutes a day. up to 55 minutes a day per using profiles. Users typically turn on the app for shorter bursts of time in the morning and in the evening. On app like Hinge, with over 23 million users, I didn't know that, the mix of time constraints and the sheer number of perceived matches replicates a speed dating scenario. What is the impact of physical attractiveness, income, warmth, and intelligence on female dating preferences in this scenario? Given the primacy of photos and limited time spent on each profile, participants privilege physical attractiveness above any other variable. Characteristics like income, intelligence, and warmth were only weighted after establishing there was physical attraction. Wolson, 2020. The bottom line is that dating apps don't appear to have given a leg up to those perceived as less physically attractive. Yeah. Now we've got studies to back the fucking incel shit, unfortunately. Well, I mean, you don't want that stuff to be true, but when you have studies that are reporting it, I don't know. I wonder what Destiny has to say about this shit. A widely reported on but now deleted 2017 analysis by Hinge engineer Aviv Goldgear suggested that men initiate matches 3 times more often than women. He discovered that 50% of their attempts or likes went to just 25% of women on the app at the time. More surprising was that 50% of women's likes went to just 15% of men. We know competition was already fierce for heterosexual men, given men represent more than 60% of dating app users. If physical attractiveness remains a driving force for matches and a majority of men on apps are perceived as less than exceptionally attractive, the chances for matches become more limited. The biggest opportunity for the greatest number of men is first illustrating their personality, warmth, and wit on their profile by responding to prompts or drafting charming about me sections. The conundrum is being able to establish an emotional connection in the initial 24 to 48 hours after matching on a dating app, especially on Bumble, where only women can initiate conversation and matches disappear after 24 hours. Yeah. It's here that the development of quick emotional attunement can translate to a phone call or first date, or daters have a chance to start a standout conversation with their potential date, while their potential date may be chatting up multiple people on the app. Here are 3 tips for everyone to level up their dating profile today. Knowing physical attractiveness is so central on dating apps, choose 4 to 6 of your favorite photos with good lighting. I recommend 1 to 2 profile shots that aren't relatively recent. And while activity shots like climbing or kayaking are great, don't be too far off in those photos. Many users make a decision on a profile based on the first photo within a few seconds. Create an engaging caption that is authentic and can serve to foster communication. Describing your favorite hobbies, latest adventure, or ideal partner in creative ways can be attention-grabbing for a great match. Strike up a conversation within the first 24 hours of matching. With millions of active monthly users, it is easy to become just another match unpursued. Leave a simple, funny, or endearing, and be responsive if your match replies in short order. Dating seems to be getting tragically harder for a growing number of men who may be chronically and involuntarily single and sexless. In the coming decade, we will need to support young men to become first emotionally attuned to themselves and then effective communicators and connectors. Beyond our looks, the dating success of a large number of men will require it. But guess what? You may be a board-certified couple and family psychologist, and you've got the right idea, Mr. Matos. Or Matos. But the problem is, this isn't going to get any better. It's not going to get any better. Eventually, what's going to happen is fucking bedlam, because these guys are going to be older and they're going to start forming gangs and all the shooty-shooty stuff happens. And yeah, that's just literally how things are supposed to go down. So, that's why I want to get the fuck out of the country before shit goes to that level. Okay, so. Oh, hold up. Okay, Daily Mail, last article. We actually had a really good red pill article, but we'll save it for later. I don't ever see myself the way other people see me. Megan Fox gets candid about her struggle with body dysmorphia while posing for Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition. Megan Fox has opened up about living with body dysmorphia during an interview with Sports Illustrated. The 36-year-old actress told the media outlet that she had never felt good about her own image and that she had been constantly working to become more comfortable in her own skin. The Transformers cast member, who is working on rekindling her relationship with Machine Gun Kelly, began the sit-down by stating, "I have body dysmorphia. I don't ever see myself the way other people see me." Fox went on to say she never felt confident when looking in the mirror. "There's never a point in my life where I love my body," she said. "Never. Ever." The new girl cast member also told the media outlet that her body dysmorphia had begun at an early age. She recalled that when I was little, that was an obsession that I had of, like, I should look this way. Fox added that it definitely wasn't environmental, because I grew up in a very religious environment where bodies weren't even acknowledged. The performer concluded by stating that she would likely continue to be concerned about her physique well into the future. The actress stated, "The journey of loving myself is going to be never-ending, I think." For Fox previously opened up about dealing with body dysmorphia during an interview with British GQ Style that was published in 2021. During the sit-down with the media outlet, the Jennifer's Body star remarked that she dealt with a lot of deep insecurities related to her image. The actress went on to express that she felt as if beauty did not equate to confidence. So she was one of those that's beautiful, but she didn't have any real confidence in herself. Yeah. She stated, "We may look at somebody and think that person's so beautiful. Their life must be so easy." Machine Gun Kelly was also interviewed and expressed that his partner's openness about her body image issues had proven to be beneficial for him as well. The rapper, born Colson Baker, stated that his fiance helped me realize that you can't bury your trauma. The performers revealed their engagement to the public in January of last year.
So I guess she divorced what's his name from 90210 or Melrose Place?
She's been with Machine Gun Kelly for a while.
Yeah.
So, okay, we do have a bonus, but this is the last, because this is 5:19, and then I'll be done. It's the last article from 5:20, and then I just have articles from 5:19, which we'll do later. You know, we'll do a catch-up show, because we didn't do, like, a couple shows. We did the interview, so yeah. We're kind of behind. I'm dating a man who earns 10 times less than I do. Doesn't bother me. My friends say I should dump him, because the relationship will never work. A woman has divided opinion after discovering that a man she is dating earns a lot less than her, prompting some of her friends to say the relationship would never work. The anonymous mother took to British parenting forum Mumsnet, where she revealed that the wage discrepancy does not bother her, but said she has worried it could pose logistical issues in the future. In her post, she wrote, "Just started dating a man and it turns out I earn 10 times what he earns. Now, I should start by saying that in theory, this doesn't bother me at all. I come from very working-class stock. We grew up on a council estate. Both my brothers have started living there with their families. I was just lucky to be studious and got on a good path. I've been divorced for a decade, and all the men I've dated have earned less than me, and it's never been an issue. However, this is the first time the gap has been this big." She added that the man still insists on paying for everything when they go out, and that he's quite old-fashioned and more generous than anyone else she's dated. Her post continued, "With the exception of the salary, we have tons in common. We both have 3 kids around the same ages, both have similar long-term dreams and interests, and just get on brilliantly. A couple of my friends have insisted it could never work, though. The concern is how it could work logistically in the long term. I have a really nice lifestyle, all self-funded, and although I'm not in designer brands or fancy restaurants, I do like to travel to nice places or be able to enjoy some of the things a higher salary allows, like being able to jump in a taxi home rather than taking public transport, that kind of thing." The woman said while she thinks it is lovely that he insists on paying, she feels guilty, as it will put much more of a financial strain on him than on her. Concluding the post, she wrote, "So unsure what to do. I couldn't care less how much a man earns. He's a hard worker and a great person and a great dad." So, I do see that logistical issues may surface in the future, though, and I'm not sure what to do about it. In a later post, she added, "He does have assets. He has a nice home. He's owned it for a long time. He has kids who are in their teens and seem pretty happy. I haven't met them, but he tells me a lot about them. I haven't asked too much about how he manages on his small salary, as I don't want to make him uncomfortable." Numerous posters felt that the massive discrepancy in earnings could become an issue in the future. One wrote, "I dated someone who earned at least 50% less than me. No desire to do anything more to earn more. He was lovely and it was nice while it lasted, but I quickly realized I would need to make other sacrifices and not do what I would like or pay the lion's share always in terms of holidays, activities, dates, etc. I wasn't comfortable with either option and knew I would resent him for his. How into him are you? Could you see yourself getting married and him having half if it didn't work out?" Another agreed, writing, "It's nice that he pays and he sounds lovely, but think about the long term. You're planning a holiday. You want to go a 5-star long haul for 3 weeks, and his budget is 3-star Europe for a week. What do you do? Do you subsidize him? What if he says no? Do you get to use subpar holidays? What if he says yes? Are you happy to subsidize him? Are you happy to pay more of household income if you move in together? It could work, but more likely you end up sacrificing in some way, and you will resent that." And a third added, "Maybe my opinion is skewed by a lifetime of relationships with low-earning, low-ambition men who seem lovely to begin with but end up thoroughly taking the piss and wringing me dry financially. Maybe he is lovely, but just be careful."
You know, she actually has a better grip on what she should be concerned with. She's more concerned with the relationship and they're talking about, what if it... you had to make sacrifices. Men are always making the sacrifices.
Absolutely.
Like I've always said, A woman can have nothing and a man will want them, but a man can have nothing and a woman won't want them until he has everything.
Absolutely. However, a number of other posters felt that money isn't everything, and that if she likes the man, she should continue to see him. One wrote, "I would, in your position. Money shouldn't dictate everything. I'd far rather take the bus with a man I love than go home alone in a taxi. You might have to make some adjustments and compromises, but that's true in any relationship, and he'll have to learn to let you treat him." Another added, "Money is just money. If you like him for him, that's what matters here, surely." And a third said, "This is probably skewed by the fact that I'm not a high earner, but this sounds completely bonkers to me. There are literally no flags about this man. I can't work out what the issue is. He is solvent, a homeowner, pays his way in yours, has a great relationship with his kids, and he has loads in common with you, and is respectful. Any problems are currently fictitious." So, that's what we have for tonight.
Ain't that crazy that so many people are trying to talk her out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, he sounds like a good guy, but nope, not good enough for most.
Absolutely. Okay, well, I think that's all we're going to do for tonight. We've done several articles. We've gone through everything from tech to anime to relationships to stuff that, I mean, this is a little quiet show, you know, kind of what we used to do.
It's always good.
Yeah, and we do want to give you guys that because we do know that you guys do come regularly for articles, and we want to bring those articles back to you.
I mean, we could always have people in the show here and there, but
yeah,
that was just smudge when nobody can enjoy it if you, because
there's fighting and arguing.
Yeah, fighting and arguing and irrational arguing, like over there talking about something crazy and you're like, that doesn't even make sense. Oh, it makes perfect sense because reincarnation is an abstract thought of our minds.
Yeah. She would do that.
And then I like jelly donuts. She'll top it.
Something weird. Something weird.
What?
And for the record, I'm not a big fan of jelly donuts.
You're an asshole. You woman hater. You rapist.
All right. Well, in that case, this is going to be the end for the Grim Lord and Dead Penetration. And we thank you all for joining us. Yeah. And I'm going to be out.
Thank you.
Enjoy the decline.